Shabbat shalom. So last week, we finished the book of Vayikra, of Leviticus. And tonight, we enter the book of Bamidbar, Numbers. As this book is generally read in the summer when our kids are away and synagogue life slows down, it's the least well-known of the books. On its face, it also appears to be the slowest moving. After all, the stories of Bereshit, of Genesis, are captivating. They tell the stories of our founding fathers and mothers. In Shemot, in Exodus, we read about Moses' confrontation with Pharaoh and our eventual release from slavery. Vayikra is filled with our rules and our laws. But this book, Bamidbar, Numbers, simply tells the story of us wandering in the desert. Even the last book, Devarim, Deuteronomy, is a recap of the whole Bible, which tells our journey and ends with us reaching the shores of the Promised Land. While major things happen in each of the other books, Bamidbar seems to only see us wandering, 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 without asking for directions. But of course, there's far more than that. This book is called two different names, in Hebrew, Bamidbar, and in English, Numbers. In Hebrew, we take the first significant word of the book and use that as its name. So the book opens with us, Bamidbar, in the desert, and thus we have the name. And it's fitting. At the beginning of the book, we are in our second year of our 40-year journey, and by the end of this book, we will have reached our 40th year and ready to relive our experiences before entering Israel. But the English name is taken from the Greek translation of the Bible, and it's called Numbers, because it both begins and ends with a census. Now, we might ask why a census would be recorded in the Torah, the book of our origins and our laws. What is importance is a list of tribes and numbers? Does it really matter whether there were 561,000 or 561,000 and one young men that were fit for military service? And why does the Bible take several chapters to meticulously record exactly how many men are from each tribe? Why not just give us a total or an estimate? Do 5 or 10 people really make a difference? While the census seems unimportant, whenever a census is taken, each person gets counted. And each person counts only once, no matter how important or unimportant they feel. When taking a census, the rich and the poor are counted alike. So often we feel as if we are only a number in life, as if our actual presence is of little value. But when a census is taken, we are reminded that yes, each of us counts equally. But the commentaries actually go further, and it tells us that it's not just about our being counted, but our responsibility to be accountable. In teaching about this passage, Nachmanides adds an important level. He teaches that rather than count each male individually, each male was instead instructed to present himself before the chieftains and announce his name and tribal affiliation and give a shekel. Then the coins were gathered by tribe and counted. In this way, all males 20 years and up that were fit for military service were counted. But the counting required active action on the part of each man. Each man had to take the time and the effort to show up and be accountable to the community by giving their shekel. Nachmanides reminds us that we have a responsibility to actively participate in and contribute to the community in which we dwell. Our tradition tells a story of an old town with one rabbi. And that rabbi had only one son. As the rabbi's son, he was quite a catch, and he was set to marry the smartest young lady in town. Everyone was very excited about this wedding, and in preparation for the celebration that would follow, the mayor declared that a large barrel to be built in the middle of town. And each family was instructed to bring a bucket of their finest, sweetest, most full-bodied wine. This way, on the night of the wedding, the town would get to share in the sweetest, most full-bodied wine that they had ever tasted. So the town carpenter built a huge barrel in the middle of town and a tall ladder that reached to the top. Over the coming weeks, each family carefully carried a bucket of their finest wine and poured it into the barrel. The night of the wedding arrived. The wedding was beautiful, not a dry eye in the community. Finally, it's time to tap the barrel. The mayor climbed up the ladder and carefully tapped the barrel as the rabbi held his glass at the spigot for the first taste of this beautiful wine. But all that came out was water. You see, each family thought their own contribution wouldn't count. They thought, what's one bucket of water amongst 100 or so buckets of wine? No one will know the difference if I shirk my responsibility and let the community make up for my deficiency. In many ways, our community is like that barrel. When each of us brings our full presence and our best selves, we are a full-bodied community. But when each of us expects others to cover for us, we all miss out. The fullness and the sweetness of our community is dependent on each member seeing themselves as being worthy of being counted and responsible enough to be accountable. If we expect others to do the work of creating and sustaining our community, then our community will be as thin as the water. But what about those times in our life when bringing a pail of wine or even a pail of water seems insurmountable? When we are facing personal hardships or tragedies, we may not have wine or sweetness to give. And therein lies the true strength of community. For if only one or two families had brought water instead of wine, then the quality of wine wouldn't have suffered. For the strength of the community is strong enough to hold up its weakest members. According to some, the anthropologist Margaret Mead was asked by a student what she considered the first sign of civilization in a culture. The student expected her to talk about fish hooks or clay pots or grinding stones. But instead, she said the first sign of civilization in an ancient culture was a femur, a thigh bone, that had been broken and healed. Mead explained that in the animal kingdom, if you break a leg, you die. You cannot run from danger, you cannot get to the river for food, for water, or hunt for food. You are meat for the prowling beasts. No animal survives a broken leg long enough for the bone to heal. A broken femur that has healed is evidence that someone has taken the time to stay with the one who fell, has bound up the wound and carried the person to safety and tended to them through their recovery. Helping someone else through difficulty is where civilization starts. While there's some doubt whether this quote is actually attributed to Margaret Mead or not, the message is profound. The mark of civilization is not our ability to care for ourselves, but our willingness to care for others. Our willingness to be accountable to whom we dwell with. So back to that census. Nachmanides taught us that the Torah records the census because it asked each man not only to be counted, but to be accountable. It reminds us that each of us matters and deserves to be counted, and that each soul is unique and loved by God. But it also demands of us that we be accountable. And being accountable means recognizing that we are bound to one another and obligated to support each other. So the next time we have the choice to either bring a full-bodied sweet wine or plain water to our community, let us bring the wine, and our entire community will share in its sweetness. Shabbat Shalom.